You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Investigators pursue the possibility that the alleged Capital One hacker might have hit other companies' data. An exposed Elasticsearch database, now secured, was found at Honda Motors. Data from beauty retailer Sephora are found on the dark web. Defenders are urged to think of themselves as in a poker game with the opposition. Phishing remains the biggest threat to financial services. And what vacation spots attract the eyes of bots? From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, August 1st, 2019. Investigation into the possibility that the alleged Capital One hacker hit other enterprises continues. According to Computing, however, Amazon says it's found no evidence that the organizations mentioned by Paige Thompson, who went by the name Erratic, were actually compromised. The FBI is sorting it out, the Wall Street Journal reports. Not all the possible victims are in the U.S. Discussing the Capital One breach, Duo Security says that people should not draw the conclusion that the cloud is somehow inherently less secure. Regular, reliable patching and updating alone represent an advantage, as does the broad view of threat activity cloud providers offer. But moving to the cloud does involve change, and that inevitably involves rethinking security. Old processes and protocols can't simply be assumed adequate in their new environment. In an unrelated compromise that illustrates the hazards of mistakenly configured databases, an unsecured Honda Motors Elasticsearch database has been found by Cloudflare researchers. The exposed information is said to contain some 134 million documents with 40 gigabytes of information on about 300,000 Honda employees worldwide. The information of most concern wasn't the personally identifiable information about employees, although there was enough of that, mostly credentials, but rather detailed information about the endpoint devices on Honda's networks. This included such information as their patch status, the nature of the protections, if any, in place on them, and their regular users. That information could have been used by an attacker to identify both weak points and high-value targets. The data were exposed for some 6 days, at which point Honda, warned by the researchers, secured it. The automobile manufacturer found no signs that anyone other than the researchers had accessed it, so perhaps Honda dodged a bullet on this one. The Straits Times discusses what appears to be a major breach at beauty retailer Sephora. Group IB has found two databases circulating in dark web markets. Combined, the two databases hold about 3.7 million records. These don't contain either payment information or plain text passwords, but Group IB says the compromised data could be exploited for social engineering. There's another case that seems to be the work of a genuine malicious insider. In this case, someone whom Bleeping Computer calls a disgruntled admin. Club Penguin Rewritten, a multiplayer online game intended for players between the ages of 6 and 14 or so, began to leak email addresses, usernames, and passwords belonging to players of the game. The leak came through a back door thought to have been installed and left open by an administrator who departed the company with a grudge. Carbon Black announces what they call the Cognitive Attack Loop. They view it as an improvement over Lockheed Martin's familiar cyber kill chain and of the similar model offered last year by MITRE. In Lockheed Martin's model, the kill chain describes a process in which attackers moved from reconnaissance, then to weaponization, on to delivery, then exploitation, to installation, to command and control, and finally on to actions and objectives. MITRE last year offered an alternative version. In that model, attackers begin by establishing initial access, then move to execution, then persistence, escalation, evasion, credential discovery, lateral movement, collection, exfiltration, and finally, command and control. Where these models' organizing metaphor was engaging a target, Carbon Black asks us to imagine that we're playing poker, estimating probabilities and taking advantage of whatever you could see in the opponent's eyes. A look at their hand would be good too, but of course you can't count on that. We note that this is a pretty adversarial form of poker, not just a few friends playing Texas Hold'em or High Chicago. Carbon Black's view of the cognitive attack loop seems to emphasize the way criminals think. Their look under the proverbial hoodie leads them to see a characteristic criminal three-step. First, reconnaissance and infiltration. Second, maintenance and manipulation. And third, execution and exfiltration. The organizing metaphor is robbery. At each step, Carbon Black is convinced, the cyber criminal exhibits some characteristic behavior. Understanding that, they argue, gives the defender an edge. It's that time of year when folks are packing their bags and their sunscreen to head out to Las Vegas for Black Hat and DEF CON. Giovanni Vigna is CTO at Lastline and also a professor of computer science at the University of California at Santa Barbara, and he offers these insights.
Well, I think that Black Hat is somewhat different from other meetings like RSA or InfoSec Security in Europe. Black Hat is more for people in the trenches, people that want to understand the current technical trends. I found that the people that attend Black Hat are a lot more involved in the day-to-day operation of securing networks, either as a solution provider or as somebody in the actual trenches. And therefore, the conversation is often very technical.
And what do you suppose is the benefit of being able to have those conversations face-to-face?
It gives you an unfiltered input on what are important aspects of the security problems. For example, while a top executive might be more concerned about how a certain solution allows him or her to report upwards about what a solution has done, somebody in the trenches might be more interested in how they can shorten the time to remediation. So for example, and I'm talking generically, you know, somebody sees a problem, a security problem, how fast they can handle the problem and find a solution to it. Those conversations oftentimes have driven our design or my understanding of how people, you know, use a specific solution.
So what are your expectations going into this year's Black Hat?
I think that one thing that I've noticed, there is a lot of talking about the cybersecurity workforce. This has been a big problem since day one. We don't have enough people doing the job. We feel the pressure. I'm sure that every company has problems hiring and retaining good people. For some reason, I've seen more of this. And so I'm curious to see what the vibe is out there in terms of what companies are doing in order to recruit, to attract talent. And since Black Hat is more, you know, technically oriented, actually, that's the right place to have that discussion. So from that point of view, that's what I'm looking for. On a more technical solution point of view, I'm looking forward to see what are the next wave of interesting technologies. You know, we had the, you know, huge artificial intelligence, machine learning push, and now we are moving more towards the network traffic analytics and visibility, and almost like, you know, the resurgence of network detection. And I am not using IDS on purpose because a lot of people, you know, consider that problem a solved problem, a commoditized solution. But guess what? We're back to, you know, those good old days of network detection.
What sort of recommendations or tips do you have for someone who may be heading out to Black Hat for the first time?
Talk to people, especially in formal setting. I found that these kind of settings where you just, you know, having a drink or, you know, talking around the proverbial water cooler are very informative, more than the discussion at, you know, the specific booth of a specific company. And so I found these gatherings to be very good. And even I would say stay for DEF CON, the, you know, the follow-up hacking convention that sometimes has even more interesting content than Black Hat.
That's Giovanni Vigna from Lastline. Akamai's latest State of the Internet report concludes that phishing remains the biggest threat to financial services firms and their customers. A study by ExpressVPN finds that less than 20% of people actually read the terms of service before they go ahead and click yes, okay, got it, or some variation thereof. That's less than 1 in 5. But maybe people should close read those every now and then, lest they find themselves agreeing to hold Company X harmless in the event that Company X should sell, lose, or take advantage of their data in some unjust way. And finally, we are now in the dog days of the Northern Hemisphere's summer, and vacation travel is on many people's minds. It's on the mind of the bots, too, or at least their masters, according to a study posted yesterday by security firm Perimeter X. In this case, they're not necessarily attacking or malicious bots, but rather bots used by companies in the travel sector to gather information about markets and interests that can guide their decisions about pricing and inventory. Airports are of particular interest. So what destinations are the bots snooping at? Iceland, Bangkok, Los Angeles, and New York. In some places, the bots outnumbered the human searchers. Perimeter X warns the travel industry that their pricing models may be seriously skewed by the bots.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
And joining me once again is Emily Wilson. She's the VP of Research at Terbium Labs. Emily, you and I have been talking about this report you all published recently. This is the next generation of criminal financing. And there were some interesting little bits and pieces, little quirks in gathering data that you discovered along the way.
There were. You know, I think we mentioned in our previous discussions about this that this is the kind of thing, how much is fraud being used to fund serious transnational crime that you would expect someone to have some data on somewhere, right? This is the kind of thing where you might have an outdated report, but you would expect there to be some data out there. In our case, in going through and trying to collect this data using court documents from a variety of different countries and trying to find instances where we see documented issues of payment card fraud or payment fraud tied back to these crimes, we ran into a lot of gaps. There were a lot of inconsistencies in documentation, a lot of inconsistencies in language, which you might expect from country to country, but even within the US, seeing a variety of different terms used to describe different fraud elements or even to describe things like payment cards. So the inconsistencies there made it difficult to do research. The other major inconsistency, and this is one that I found more troubling, is the gaps in reported fraud losses. So in the report, we talk about what we were able to measure in documented fraud losses from the cases used in this study. We found more than $1 billion in documented fraud losses. And $1 billion might seem like a lot, and it is a lot of money. But that comes from a very small percentage of cases that, first of all, reported any documented fraud losses, and second of all, provided any kind of value measure for them. Some of these would say things like more than $50,000 or more than $300,000, up to $1 million. And so we're talking about a subset of a subset of cases used for just this initial study to get to $1 billion just because of gaps in documentation. What that tells me is that this is actually a multi-billion dollar problem. And the fact that we don't know how many billions of dollars in credit card fraud are being used to fund terrorist groups like Hezbollah or being used to traffic minors across international borders, that's concerning. You know, there aren't any requirements about consistently documenting these fraud losses or even consistently bringing fraud charges when you're able. We saw cases where judges openly said they weren't interested in the fraud charges. And how many cases are there that the fraud charges didn't even make it as far as official documentation? This is a huge problem, and we don't have a good way to measure it, which I think is really concerning.
And so in your estimation, what sort of solution could be created here?
There are a few different areas, I think, where we need to make some changes. One, of course, law enforcement is under-resourced. They are constantly dealing with budget shortages and personnel shortages, and so fraud is never going to be at the top of the list of crimes you want to go after. There are plenty of violent crimes you might want to go after. Even some of these more serious transnational crimes, things like drug trafficking, that's always going to come before fraud does. So on the law enforcement side, I think trying to find some incentives there that, you know, we should be looking at fraud as money. We should be looking at fraud as financing. And how does that change the calculus of, you know, if you go in and bust a major drug ring, you know, you find stolen credit cards, you get them on fraud charges. But what about the transaction history for those cards? Are there patterns there that can tie back to some sort of broader ring? Are there patterns there that can tie to other activities? That's on the law enforcement side. On the financial side, you know, the card networks like Visa and American Express, these card networks are in possession of a lot of information. They have all of the transaction data for their issuing banks. So they are really the ones here who have the aggregate data that could point to fraud trends that you might see that could flag something like organized crime, that could flag something like human trafficking. And of course, the financial industry and the payments industry don't have specific regulation about a maximum allowable amount of fraud. The card networks do have certain requirements. Obviously, there's a lot of anti-money laundering legislation. But when you think about some of the smaller charges that could be building up, a hotel room here, a plane ticket there, small budget items that could be used, again, to fund some of the operational cost or the lifestyle cost for these groups, especially if you're spreading that out over a large number of cards, you know, how are we going to begin to identify patterns in this data unless we have something like a card network working with law enforcement and an understanding on both sides here that this fraud is being used to fund very serious crimes. This fraud is, in effect, a national security issue. It's not just a financial issue. It's not just a nuisance. It's not just part of a bottom line where you have to worry about customer stickiness or reissuing cards or chargeback costs, right? This is funding. That's one of the reasons that we named the report what we did. It's the next generation of criminal financing. And of course, in the dark web, we see millions of stolen cards for sale. So it's very easy for people to get their hands on these cards. And then no one's asking too many questions once, you know, the fraud happens. It's more about remediation and a little bit less about investigation.
All right. Well, Emily Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. Their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business.